Parshat Lech Lecha. Again, it's just chock full of all sorts of great stuff. But there's a particular scene in it that I found a little bit troubling, and I want to preface it with the following general methodological comment. When we study Tanakh, so one question that we're immediately plagued by, I'd say that notably because we just finished Parshat Bereshit Noach, is how literally are we meant to read the text? That becomes a very big issue in the story of the creation itself and Gan Eden, and there are different Rishonim, take different approaches to what part should we read as metaphor, what part, you know, and throughout Bereshit there are expressions of God's physicality, like God walking through the garden, so how much should we read that as literal? That's one particular issue. But there's another question that we always have to keep at the forefront of our study. What was Abraham? How tall was Abraham?
10 feet.
We have no idea, right? No clue. What was Abraham's nickname for Yishmael?
Shmuel.
We got no clue, right? What did Abraham usually have for lunch on Fridays? We got no idea. Now, why is it that we don't know that, but we do know what Abraham served to the three guys who either did or didn't come to the house, to the tent?
It's not important.
Because it's not important. There's tons of information, tons of conversations, tons of relationships that exist that we're not told about because they just don't matter to the story. Which therefore turns things around and says, whenever I read something that is in there, I got to find out why it's there. Now clearly the visit of the three guys that either did or Rambam didn't happen to the tent is important because of the annunciation of the birth of Yitzchak and the explanation of Tzchok, etc. And it's all part of the preface to those guys going to Sodom and doing that. Okay, I get that. There's a whole story that occupies a nice chunk of real estate in Lech Lecha, which is the story of the Battle of the Kings. And you could start by asking, what do I need the whole story for? And the answer would probably be one of three different things, probably all of them. One of them would be to show Avraham's power and might, which we don't hear about otherwise, and make it even more impressive that Avraham never takes land by power, even though he's clearly a powerful guy. The second thing is the whole meeting with Malki Tzedek, which seems to confirm the bracha given to Avraham, Avraham brachecha, and people will bless you. And the third is the detente and the interaction with Melech Sodom and Avraham's response to that, which actually I was originally going to talk about that interaction with the sandal strap and the string, but I wanted to go on something else. But there's a lot of details in the story that seem to be superfluous and unnecessary for us. And there's one tiny little piece in there that I'd like to focus on as kind of a springboard for something, but I'm going to actually start from somewhere very different. I want to start from the end. I'm going to start from near the end of Sefer Dvarim, and really near the end, because it's something given in Dvarim that is intended to happen only after Sefer Dvarim, when we come to the land. So if you look at Source 1, and today, somehow, we got fortune. I was able to put translations for everything. Alright, so Moshe is at Arvot Moab. He's just finished Nu'um HaMitzvot. This is a whole list of the mitzvot that Moshe has presented. And now, this is the beginning of the Brit. Alright, so what does he say? Well, on the day that you cross, I want you to take huge boulders and plaster them. Plaster them. Why plaster them? Now, we would assume that it's because of the next pasuk. You're going to write on the stones the words of the Torah. Does it mean Rosh Tevot? Does it mean all the words of the Torah? Does it mean all the words of the Torah in 70 languages? I don't know. But you're going to write something on the Mizbeach, on these rocks, sorry, the words of the Torah. Somehow this act of writing this stuff is going to help you cross into the land. Which of course it says reified a little bit because you've already crossed into the land. But notion seems to be that you're coming into the land will be successful or will be justified by your setting up these big rocks and plastering them and writing the words of the Torah on them. It seems to be a reach. And then that's like a huge accomplishment for very little effort. Okay, although I wouldn't want to be the guy to do the plastering. And then it continues. V'hayaba ovrachemet hayarden. Now we're told to take these rocks and set them up on Har Eval. We all know Har Eval is just north of Shechem, facing Har Gerizim. And again, the emphasis on the plaster, which is itself a little bit of a strange thing. We already know we're going to plaster them, so why the mention of the plaster? And that's why I put it in color. By the way, these rocks are not the Mizbeach. So besides the rocks with the plaster and the writing, also you're going to build a Mizbeach. Mizbeach avanim lo tani faleihem barzel. It's going to be a Mizbeach of rocks. You're not going to hew them, right? You're not going to cut them. Avanim shtoy mo tignei Mizbeach adonai d'racha v'nayitit alav alot v'adonai d'racha yigmin korbanot, which by the way may remind us of something. V'zavach tashlamim v'achal tasham yigmin olot en zvachim, burnt offerings and peace offerings. Rejoice before God. Write all the words of the Torah on it by Er Hetev, which means it's going to be clear, or translation, whatever it may mean. All right. I'm not sure I get all of what's going on, but what I don't get is the emphasis on the plaster, which is mentioned twice. Who cares? And if you're telling me that the plaster is just a necessary physical component in order to allow you to write on the rocks, it's not necessarily the case, because we've got rocks where people write on rocks. But it makes it easier to write on rocks. I'm like, that's to say it once. But why mention it twice? And it sounds like I'm picking on the tiniest little thing from a huge parsha, but I think it's actually much bigger than that. And to get there, I'd like to bring another methodological point, one that we've talked about a lot in here. When studying Tanakh, the truth is, when studying anything, but when studying Tanakh, it is vital that we put ourselves into the place and as much as possible picture the reality of what's going on. We've got the Akedah, we've got to actually picture walking from a distance and seeing in front of us an old man and his son and a couple of lads and a donkey and wood. We have to, and then, if possible, try to imagine, if we get a clue, what's going through their head, what the terrain looks like. I remember one time being up on Har HaTzofim. The spot on Har HaTzofim below the university where you can sit. There's some grass where you can sit and see Har HaBayit right in front of you. And you can see everything south from there. And a teacher of mine pointing out, he said, you see over there, and he pointed to Armon HaNatziv. Armon HaNatziv, which was the British mandate governor's mansion, which is in Talpiot Mizrach, there was a spot from there where you can see Har HaBayit. You can see Har Moriah. But it's a distance. And he then had me open up Reshit Chafbet. And here's Avraham and Yitzchak. And what does Avraham say to the boys? He says, V'ani v'anar nelcha ad ko, v'yishtachavev v'nashu aleichem. But it's Merachok. He says, that's where they were standing. You can see, they're coming from the south. What's the first spot you get to where you can see Har HaBayit? It's there, Amon HaNatziv. And so that's the point at which he says, we're going to go to there, and you guys stay here. Now, whether he's actually right exactly to this, to the dunam, I don't know. But it obviously makes it a lot more real, and you can understand the story better, besides the cool factor, which is, like, amazing. All right? So, I want to bring that to you because of this. What is plaster? What is plaster? What is it?
What's it made out of?
What's it made out of?
Water.
Sand. Okay, so how do you make plaster? So in the ancient world, the way they made plaster, and they're still, until 100 years ago, they're still making plaster like this in some places,
wine.
Is they would take rocks and build like a pyramid and leave a hole in the middle, so like a halal, an empty area. And they would then stuff in, this is typically done at the end of the summer, they would stuff in flammable materials and light them and create an unbelievably intense fire that would last for days. And ultimately, the rocks would melt, especially limestone, which is very soft rock, which you have a lot of in Israel, would melt, and that was the plaster. That was the plaster.
What did they use to adhere the plaster or the rocks to a wall?
What?
What did they use to adhere the melted...
These rocks are just piled. Piled. And then there was a hole in the middle for air.
No, I understand, but when you have the melted...
then they'd all melt down.
Right.
And then what you would find often, and you find a mention of this in Yeshayahu, what you would find often is little pebbles that got shot out of the fire. They're from a distance. So in the area around it, you'd find that. But what was really fascinating is that during this entire period, there was a thick, non-ending column of smoke going up from this fire, from this spot. Okay, keep that in mind. And now let's see something interesting that happens. Remember we mentioned that they are, we're coming to this mountain, and what are we going to do? They're going to build these rocks and plaster. They're also doing something else. They're building these be'ach and bringing korbanot and celebrating there, which should remind us of the only other time in history that we had a public gathering and built these be'ach and brought olot and shlamim and celebrated there. Where was that? That was at Har Sinai. Shmon Chavdalit. Okay, let's listen to the description of Har Sinai. When we talk about Matan Torah, Moshe brings Bnei Yisrael to Har Sinai. So now there's a cloud over the mountain. We got that. V'Har Sinai Ashan Kulo, source 2. It's all smoke. Mimnei Asher Yarad Alav Adonai Ba'esh. Because God has come down to the mountain in fire. In other words, God's presence is fire. And fire hits the flammable material. We got smoke. V'Yal Ashano Ke'eshen HaKivshan. The smoke rises from Har Sinai like the smoke from a furnace. We're getting this image now of a huge column of smoke, non-ending, coming up from this mountain. Okay, so now let's flip back. Before we get into Bereishit, let's flip back into Dvarim. If we're supposed to go up to Har Eival, and we're supposed to put these rocks together, and then we're supposed to plaster them, what are we going to need to do right nearby? We're going to have to create this furnace and create this huge, hot thing to burn, melt the rocks, which means here we are at a mountain with a huge column of smoke rising, after which we're going to do what? We're going to write the words of the Torah, build a mizbeach, and celebrate. In other words, what are we creating? Mamad Har Sinai. But a crucial point of Mamad Har Sinai is the smoke. So now let's roll it back to Bereishit and see what happens. You take a look at source 4. We're going to come back to 3 in a few minutes if we have time. And source 4 also in Dvarim, because it's all now reflected. On the other side, we're going to be all in Bereishit. In Dvarim, the destruction of the cities of Sodom and its other cities, is something that was evidently made such a mark on people's awareness that it already, in Sefer Dvarim, at the end, so this is not 40 years after Sodom, this is 400 years after Sodom. Or several hundred years after Sodom. And Bnei Israel have been in Mitzrayim, and they've come out. Bnei Israel still know the story of Sodom. How well do they know it? That Moshe tells them, this is the Brit, and if you guys mess up, you know what's going to happen? You guys are going to be destroyed, just like Sodom and Amorah. And he describes it. V'amar hador ha'charon. B'neichem asher yakum mi'achreichem. Your kids are going to save. Anochi asher v'omer tzachokah. And strangers will come from another land. They're going to see what's happened to your land. So this terrible destruction that's described, the salting of the earth, scorching the earth, nothing can grow. Like the famous story of the destruction of Sodom. In other words, the destruction of Sodom and how the destruction of Sodom happened is such a central story here that it's used as a reference point for a later destruction. That's what people are going to say. Ooh, this is like Sodom. Okay, turn the page. We start off, and really what we're looking at is the story of Sodom, but the story of Sodom is actually much bigger than the story of Sodom. In Bereishit Yud Gimel, in the beginning of Lech Lecha, Avram comes to Israel, then there's a famine, Avram goes to Egypt, Avram becomes enriched, Avram comes back, Lot is also enriched, and a couple years ago we talked about why they split. Avram and Lot have to split. Avram says to Lot, either go north or south, remember, Yamin Vasmila. Lot instead chooses east and goes down into the valley of the Arden, the Kikar Yarden, which is all lush, and he comes to the people of Sodom, and that's where he stays, even though, what's the end of it? But how is Sodom in this area described right now? It's described Kigan Adonai Keres Mitzrayim. Beautiful garden of God. It looks like Egypt. Because right now there's a beautiful river flowing through. There's no destruction. There's no salt. There's no potash. And it's all lush. It's all green. It's all available. And we've talked a number of times about why Lot made that choice and what the implications for us are. Now, so far it's all sweet and all good. And the people of Sodom are rotten. Now we move to the story that I started with at the beginning. The story of the kings. In the middle of the story of the kings, which again is about a few other things going on, we hear this description. So the five kings come out. Where do they go to war? Emek Hasidim, which would mean the Valley of Plaster. What kind of place is that? That's why I named it Plasterdale, right? What does it mean, a valley of plaster? What does it mean? What was going on in that valley? They're making plaster. So now picture what's happening. When they come in to make war, what do you have around you? You have burned out furnaces where, at least previously, if not currently, there's these huge columns of smoke. Interesting. So this is where they're going to war. And then ultimately they have the detente. And then we're told, Emek Hasidim Berot Berot Chemar. It's got pits filled with slime, which evidently is the runoff from this stuff. So the kings ran and they ended up getting taken there. Everybody else ran to the mountains. So now, again, I ask the question, why do we care? What do I need it for? Why do I need to know that? And I is not just I in the 21st century. It's I also at Har Sinai. What does this tell me? That there was Emek Hasidim, Berot Chemar. I'm not getting any new information, anything important to me. Maybe that I am. What happens immediately after war with the kings? We're told, Achar Advarim Ma'ila. After the war with the kings, and the detente with Melech Shalem, and the negotiations of Melech Sodom, Achar Advarim Ma'ila, Hayad Dvar Adonai Al Avram B'machazel Emor. Al Tira Avram. And Avram says, what do you mean? You're giving me a big sachar. I don't have any kids. All I have is Damesek Eliezer, my CFO. He's going to get everything. So Hashem says, look at the stars. Right? And then what does Avram say? Avram says, Bamei Daki Rashana. How do I know I'm going to inherit it? All right. Take a look and see something. I'll be honest with you. I never got this until now. Take a look at source 7. Avram said, "Bamei daki rashan. How do I know I'm going to inherit it? Vayomri lav, chali eglam shulashet, ve'ezmu shulashet, v'ayom shulash, v'tor v'gozal. Take me these three animals, take for me, these three animals and two birds. V'ikachlo et kol eleh v'yavatero tam batavach. What does he do? He cuts the animals in half. V'yitin ish bitrol likat reyu, and he sets them up like this. So half a, how do you call it, a ram, half a calf, like that. Right? And about Tetzipor Lovatar, he didn't cut the birds in half. In the meantime, a vulture comes down to eat the meat, and Avram sends it away. The sun was setting. And Avram suddenly is caught into deep sleep. Suddenly, there's a great darkness falls on Avram. And now what happens? And this, by the way, is the central directive to Avram. This is Jewish history right here. We know these lines. The promise, your kids are going to be strangers in a foreign land, they'll be oppressed, they'll be worked for a very long time, I will judge the nation that oppresses them, and they'll come out with great wealth. Right? We've spoken in the past of Rabbi Soloveitchik's idea that Yaakov thought he was living that through with Lavan. We assume that that's what Yitzhak Mitzrayim was. Maybe it's a constant thing. The Hisha Amda maybe indicates that something happens in every generation in a mini way. Okay, that's the brief. And now the sun actually set. So this all happened during sunset. Now the sun sets. It was dark. Suddenly, what is there with Avram. A furnace with a tongue of fire coming out. Asheravar ben Agzarim Ayla. Between the two sets of pieces. In other words, here's the two parts of the animal. Suddenly, in between where Avram is, there's a fire. And by Yom Ahu Karatan Right Avram Brit Nimar. And on that day, Avram, Hashem made the Brit. Now, we thought the Brit was the words. The Brit is, you live through this terrible stuff, and in the end, it's all going to be good. But the Brit doesn't happen until there's the fire there. The smoke, the column of smoke. Wait, we just had a column of smoke, didn't we? We just had a war going on in Emek HaSidim. Okay. So maybe the Brit has something to do with smoke. I don't mean the smoke itself. The smoke is symbolic of something inherent to the Brit. Okay. Roll ahead, and you don't need to see this because you all know. Avram is living in Hebron. He's got visitors come to him, announce about the child being born. Okay. He escorts them out, and then he finds out that Sodom is going to be destroyed. He negotiates. Right? These guys go in to see if they can find any righteous people, any innocent people. They can't find anybody. And finally, they get Lot and his wife and his two daughters out of town. Okay. On their way out of town, the wife turns around, becomes a pillar of her community. In the meantime, what happens here? Take a look at the last source. What comes down from heaven? Fire. He turns all these cities around. He destroys them. All the citizens, all the vegetation, it's all destroyed. Right? She turns around and she becomes a Netziv Melach. Right? Right, you know the story that the Lot's daughters, they wrote a book, my mom and the Netziv. Okay. Anyways, Beis came Avraham Baboker. Avraham gets up early in the morning. This is, by the way, the source that we use for Avraham Tikin Shachrit in this pasuk. Right? He gets up there, and what does he see? Has anybody ever been to Avraham's footsteps? Ever seen it? It's in Shetach A, so you really can't go without the army, but it's a very cool spot. Overlooking Sodom, outside of Hebron, Drom Har Hebron, there's this rock with two huge footsteps in it. And that's where Avram stood and watched the destruction of Sodom. Is it? I don't know. But anyhow, watch this. Vayashkef al pnei Sodom v'amora v'al pnei kol eretz hakikar. Avram looks down at Sodom and everything else. What does he see? V'nei ala kitor aretz kikitor kivshan. What does he see? The smoke is coming up from the land like the smoke out of a furnace. What's he seeing? A plaster valley. But the whole thing is a plaster valley. So what happened when Melech Sodom went to war? He was going into a plaster valley, which is foreshadowing what's going to happen to Sodom themselves. Now, why is this significant? Because Avraham accepts a brit, makes a brit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the land. What does the brit involve? The brit involves all sorts of really nice things, and it also involves war. It involves war. You're going to have to come back and conquer the land. Where does that play out first in Avram's life? When he watches the destruction of Sodom. Where does it play out next? When Bnei Yisrael come to Har Sinai and they sign the Brit, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu make Har Sinai look like? Like the destruction of Sodom. You're committing yourselves to the Torah. It's a commitment to great stuff, but it's also going to involve destroying evil. After all, what's the first command that we're given when entering the land? Abed tabed, kol mekomot, destroying avodah zarah. That's not the end goal, but that's a necessary step. And so when we're coming back into the land with a new generation that wasn't at Har Sinai, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu command us to do? Reenact Har Sinai and Har Eval. Make the smoke. Write the Torah on the rocks. Make a mizbeach and celebrate, just like you did at Har Sinai. All the components. The celebration, the commitment, but the willingness also to use the fire. So the fire, which was at the very inception of the breed with Avraham, now comes back at these later points in history as part of our commitment to the breed. Footnote. I'm going to tell you a story about a city, and tell me which city it is. There is a city in Israel. Don't guess it. Two people enter the city in order to check it out. These two people are granted hospitality by somebody who, it turns out, has a sexual life that we're not so thrilled with. Sexual mores that we're not thrilled with. The person who took them in and that person's family are the only people spared when this town is destroyed. It's destroyed miraculously with things falling down. And the visitors are the ones who actually pull that person and their family out and save them as the town is destroyed. And the town is to be left destroyed where you can't do anything with it. What town am I talking about? What? Los Angeles. What? What town is it? And Stone. It's exactly Stone. Lot. Look how he ends up with his daughters.
That was
I know, but I'm saying, in retrospect, you look back. If you look, think about it, the War of Jericho is a very bizarre war. You come in to conquer a land, the first thing you do is destroy a city and then not walk away from it and never touch it and you can never build it. The War of Jericho doesn't make sense. The War of Jericho is a reenactment of the war against Stone. Almost step by step. The two malachim come in and they end up with Rachab, and then they have Rachab's family saved, and they're the ones who pull her out of the city, and then miraculously the walls fall down and they're destroyed, and it's Cherem Lashem, and you're not allowed to rebuild it, just like nothing can grow in Stone. Why is there a need for another Stone? Because Bnei Yisrael in the intervening years have not proved that they have any moral superiority over Lot, because after all, what was Lot's position in Israel? I want to go back to Egypt. And that's why I picked Stone. What did Bnei Yisrael say in the Midbar? I want to go back to Egypt. So how do they prove their moral superiority? They have to actually extirpate Stone again. And that's what Yericho is. And then they come up to Har Eival and they set up the column of smoke, which represents that destruction. When they showed their commitment, we're going to come into the land, and we're going to come to the land loyal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reenacting Mamad Har Sinai, and ultimately reenacting the Brit that Hashem made with Avram immediately after the war with the kings, where this whole story starts.